First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
Alrighty, we are halfway home on a Monday afternoon as we'll get to a little more Damian Lillard later on in the show. Also saw something on NFL.com that is a fun little chatty sports radio type of conversation. They did a mock draft of every active NFL player. And there were some takeaways that I had from the first round of the draft, which, again, obviously stuff that we'll never see come to the light of day, but fun to talk about, so we'll get to that as well. But I wanted to do what we always do on a Monday now, and we're going to hit the diamond with an MLB weekend whip around now as we'll look at some of the major results from the last 3 days that were. So let's get it started right now with the three series that I was looking at from Friday through Sunday, and one of them carried over into today. But we talked about these weekend matchups on Friday as ones to keep an eye on, and there was one in the Eastern time zone, one in the Central time zone, and one in the Pacific time zone. Down in the East, it was the Atlanta Braves and the Miami Marlins. In the National League East, the two teams that were atop the division, and listen, the Braves are the best team in baseball right now. They set a record over the weekend with 8 total All-Stars, and the Marlins sure did. My thing about the Marlins was, okay, they've been winning a lot of close games. They're fun. They're cute. They win these close, low-scoring games. Luis Arraez might hit 400. Sandy Alcantara and Yuri Perez and the rotation, some friends from the DR. And, you know, Miami sports. You know, everything's going great for them in South Florida. But I was not buying in because their run differential most of the year was negative. And then they finally got their run differential over into the positive side. And what happened this weekend? They lost 3 games to the Braves, 16-4, 7-0, and 6-3. So their run differential, actually, I stand corrected, it was exactly 0 heading into the weekend. Outscored by 22 runs in those 3 games. So a minus 22 run differential now for the Marlins. And listen, they might hang around. They may even sneak into the playoffs, but I just don't know if they're there yet. I mean, Skip Schumacher might be the National League Manager of the Year when the season's over. Kind of getting some last year Orioles vibes from them where it's like, okay, maybe you're coming, but I don't know that I see it yet. There was a big reason why we felt, at least I think a lot of people thought, the National League East was the best division in baseball coming into the year, because you had the reigning National League champion Phillies, the World Series champion from 2 years ago Atlanta, and the Mets had obviously won 100 games last year and spent a bunch of money. And I think people felt the Marlins were better than most fourth-place teams in their division. In other words, I think 500 maybe was a reasonable expectation for Miami. They might end up overachieving beyond that. But I still don't think they're a playoff team. And this was a real prove-it opportunity for the Marlins. And boy, did they fold with flying colors. They didn't even need to win the series. If it was 3 close games and they got one of them, I'd say, okay, I'll at least take you seriously, but I think the Marlins are frauds. And the Braves, on the other hand, like I said, they are the best team in baseball. 8 All-Stars total. It's a ton. So good for them. The series in the Central time zone that I had my eye on was the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers in the Lone Star State. The Rangers drop 2 of the first 3. They'll go for the split this afternoon in Arlington. It's a big swing game today. If the Astros can win today, they will have cut the lead in the AL West down to 3. It started at 5. You win 3 out of 4 and you pick up 2 games. That's a pretty productive weekend on the road for the Astros. However, if the Rangers win, you get a split. You're right back where you started the weekend. And if you're the Rangers, that's all you're trying to do, is just keep yourselves at arm's distance from the Astros the rest of the year. I don't think anybody thinks the Rangers are going to run away and hide from Houston, but if you're the Rangers, you're just trying to keep it at, as I said, arm's length. Anywhere from 4 to 7 games is reasonable to think that if the Rangers do that, it just stays in that neighborhood. And, you know, it's not all that dramatic in September in the American League West. That's what Texas is hoping to do. But if the Astros win today, it goes down to three. And Houston's two wins over the weekend. I also think this is very imperative for a Houston team that the starting pitching has kind of come and gone this year. You could argue, are they missing Justin Verlander or not? Their two wins on Friday and yesterday were driven by strong bullpen performances, and that was their bullpen was lights out last year on their way to a division title. So I definitely think that the Houston Astros bullpen pitching the way it pitched in those two wins over the weekend will be critical for them in the second half of the year. I think that today you got two pitchers who had good 2022s in Christian Javier and Martin Perez. Both have dipped back a little bit. And so perhaps a get-right opportunity for one or both of those starting pitchers. I believe Perez was an all-star last year, and Christian Javier obviously was the starting pitcher in that combined no-hitter for the Astros in the World Series last year against the Phillies. So two out of three so far for the Astros. They look to make it three out of four against Texas today on the road in Arlington. And lastly, the other series, the Pacific Time Zone series that I was looking at over the weekend, featured a pair of potential playoff teams, an interleague matchup between the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Los Angeles Angels, and the Diamondbacks win two out of three. The Angels did beat Zach Gallen yesterday, potential National League Cy Young Award winner, to avoid the sweep. The National League West, I believe, is going to go down to the wire between Arizona, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. I think all three teams are pretty legit. Bad weekend for the Dodgers in Kansas City, by the way. They lose two out of three to the Royals. But not great for the Giants either, losing two out of three in Queens against the Mets. So the Diamondbacks pick up a little bit of ground on their division rivals this weekend. And, I think all three of those teams are legit. And I'm be curious to see how aggressive each one of them are at the end of July when we get down to the nitty-gritty early August trade deadline time. So Diamondbacks win the series. And then from the Angels side of the equation, I felt like this was an important series for the Angels to kind of reestablish themselves a bit after they lost the last two games of the series against the Chicago White Sox at home last week. White Sox are not a very good team. And I worried for the Angels that maybe this was the beginning of them slowly eroding in the American League playoff picture. And while they did win yesterday, I do fear that that could be a reality for the Angels in that, they lose two out of three, split a series, lose two out of three. And in a month we look up and they're 5-6 games out of a wild card, 10-11 out in the division. That's what I fear could happen for the Angels, because you look at the American League playoff picture, and I feel pretty confident about five of the six playoff teams, and those five being the Tampa Bay Rays, the Baltimore Orioles, the Texas Rangers, the Houston Astros, and the American League Central champion. I feel pretty good about five of those six. And so then it comes down to the last wild card, in which we have three teams right now in the standings that we can look at and say maybe it's them. Toronto, the Yankees, and the Angels. Why should I trust the Angels to get that spot? And why would I expect any of those other teams I mentioned would collapse? Somebody has to win the American League Central. Houston has been in the ALCS every year for 6 years in a row. The Rangers have done enough to where I definitely trust them with all the runs they've been scoring. The Rays are, before the Braves, everybody said the Rays were the best team in baseball, and the Orioles have arrived. So if you're the Angels, you're really battling for this wild card spot. I know Aaron Judge isn't there for the Yankees. Maybe he comes back in August. We still don't know about that. Toronto obviously has a lot of bats in their lineup. So I think in a weird way, I talked about this earlier in the baseball season. This is kind of the worst season that the Angels could have. And what I mean by that is now they're not going to trade Shohei Ohtani at the deadline. They're going to keep him to try and make the playoffs. And then I think they're going to end up missing the playoffs and he's still going to leave. Whereas if they were having another typical season's over by Memorial Day Angels season, then it's a no-brainer that you trade them. And now they're in this weird on-the-fence, what-do-we-do spot with him for the rest of this year. And given how much they've invested in just the roster, not just Ohtani, but what they've paid Trout and Anthony Rendon, they're going to try and make the playoffs, and I just don't think they're going to. One last piece of baseball news from the weekend. The Home Run Derby field is crystallizing. We still got two spots open, but here are the six that we know are in the Home Run Derby. Adley Rutschman, Pete Alonso, Randy Arozarena of the Tampa Bay Rays, of course, Adley from the Baltimore Orioles, and Alonso, a New York Met. Mookie Betts, of course, Los Angeles Dodger, Vladdy Jr. from the Blue Jays, and the homeboy up there in the Pacific Northwest, Julio Rodriguez. So that's the six that we know. Not bad. I got to say, you could certainly argue, well, Randy or Rosarena, but listen, we got to get some more Rays into this national spotlight. I mean, they have all these players, and I feel like nobody really knows who some of these guys are. And Rosarena's got 16 bombs, OPS plus 149. I'm good with it. And, you know, I certainly think we're going to be seeing plenty of Wander Franco in years to come in the All-Star game. So, you know, I respect a lot of what the Rays do and finding ways to zig when everybody else zags and winning with the payroll that they have. But a player here or a player there on a big stage never hurt anybody. So that's what we know right now for the Home Run Derby field. I'm sure that will get finalized in the coming days. We are 7 days away from the Home Run Derby, which I actually do enjoy. I don't really watch any of the All-Star games, but the Home Run Derby is very simple. Hit the ball over the fence, and that's it. There's never any dunk contest drama as to, oh, that guy's dunk was better or whatever. Like, you know what? I know we'd all love the balls to go 500 feet, but if they go 375 and clear the wall, it's still a home run. So I look forward to the Home Run Derby for sure, but All-Star game, I'll pass on that. All right, we will step away, and I mentioned earlier in the show how if I was an NBA team that was a fringe contender, even if I wasn't the Miami Heat, who seems to be the Lillard sole fixation right now, I would still kick the tires on trying to get him. I have him for 3 years, and I would try and convince him to play for me. I have five teams who I think should consider that. That's on the other side. It's a Monday afternoon. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
This is Brett Musburger from VSiN, and you're listening to First Name Sports. Now back to Greg Frank on Sports Map Radio.
So I'm not much of a music guy in general, but certainly rap is probably not my genre anyway. But supposedly this is Dame Lillard, who we're coming back with. Yeah, fair enough. As we roll on here, keep an eye on Wimbledon first day at the All England Lawn Tennis Club. The American Coco Gauff in some trouble against fellow American Sophia Kenin. Kenin won the Australian Open a few years ago and has slipped down in the rankings considerably of late. But, it's crazy Coco's still just 19. My sister lives in London, and I was lucky enough to see Coco in 2019. I went to Wimbledon, and 2019 was when it was her first big breakthrough, got to the round of 16 as a 15-year-old. And I remember I was at the match. She played Simona Halep and lost, and Halep ended up winning Wimbledon that year. But it was so cool to be there on the most hallowed grounds of the sport, seeing this breakout star. And you know, she hasn't won a major yet, but certainly think she's going to get it at some point. I mean, again, it's crazy. She's been on the pro tour for 4 years, and she's still a teenager. So see if she can pull through here in a tight third set right now against Sophia Kenin. But I have five teams here that are not the Miami Heat who should call the Portland Trailblazers and try and get Damian Lillard. Because, again, I don't care what his camp says. I don't care, you know, how loyal he was to Portland. That doesn't owe you the desire to pick your destination with 3 years left on your contract and you don't have a no-trade clause. So, you know, your contract's your contract. And, you know, you should honor that. And I think we've gotten too far away from that in today's NBA. And for a while, everybody looked at Lillard and said, yay for him. He's loyal and staying in Portland. Look at that. But now he's trying to pick his spot when his contract says that he doesn't get to do that. So that's why if I was another team out there, I would make a call because you get him for 3 years. He's not going to sit out 3 years. Call that bluff. And see what you can do. You're going to have Damian Lillard on your roster for 3 years. It's a really good start. So here are the five teams. All five of these teams were either in the playoffs last year or in the play-in tournament last year. So the five that I'm looking at, there's three from the East and two from the West. The first one is the New York Knicks. This is a no-brainer. Okay, the Knicks have been hoarding draft assets for multiple years now in hopes of a star becoming available, and it seemed like they were obviously very much in on Donovan Mitchell, and that didn't work out last summer. He ended up going to Cleveland, who then the Knicks eliminated in the first round of the playoffs this year. But it's listen, like Jalen Brunson would be a good enough teammate. You guys would make this work. Jalen Brunson, I understand, really took off this year in New York. But, you know, this guy's a second-round pick. Played at Villanova with a lot of guys that are in the NBA. Got DiVincenzo. They're getting all his boys back. And they got Josh Hart. Obviously, Hart was on the team last year. And so I don't worry that much about them butting heads or making it work in the backcourt together. So I think the Knicks are an easy one. Okay, they were fourth in the East this year. So that's a team that we think is legitimately a star away. And it has a bunch of draft picks. So the Knicks are my first one. We're going to go to a different borough of New York, and the Brooklyn Nets are the next team I wanted to highlight because the Nets also have a lot of draft ammunition from the Kevin Durant trade. Now, they owe more picks to Houston via the Harden trade still. They haven't paid all their debts there. But they restocked the cupboard on draft assets in moving Durant, and they also got Mikal Bridges in that trade. And Bridges is supposedly very good friends with Damian Lillard. And there was a clip going around in, I think, like May or something of Lillard saying, you know, Bam and Bridges are his boys. And so if he was ever to move on from Portland, it sounded like he was still on the fence as to if he wanted out, that Miami and Brooklyn would be the two spots. Obviously, Miami is very much, you know, out there. But again, Miami needs to come up with a package that meets the price that Portland deems acceptable. And if they don't do that, Portland does not have to trade him to Miami. So I don't know if the Nets wanted to keep Lillard around for the long haul beyond this contract. They probably want to keep Bridges as well because, again, they have their good friends, supposedly. But a bunch of draft picks from the Suns via the Durant trade is a good place to start when it comes to trying to put something together that would make it work for Portland. The next team on my list is, this is a little bit more of a pipe dream, but I have the Atlanta Hawks. They were seventh in the East. They kind of sort of made it competitive in the first round against Boston after being down 3-1. They won game five on the road and lost a competitive sixth game at home in their elimination game. But the reason I listed Atlanta here was because I did see some stuff over the weekend about Atlanta kicking the tires on a Pascal Siakam trade. Now, Pascal Siakam's not as good as Damian Lillard, and Pascal Siakam only has 1 year left on his contract, and he's a forward, and you know they obviously with Trae Young and DeJounte Murray probably like their backcourt. But you're not winning a championship with Trae Young as your best player. You're just not. Okay, you got to one conference finals because Ben Simmons passed up a wide open dunk in a game seven home. The Sixers also blew a 25-point lead in game five of that series. They lost three games at home. The Sixers did that series. They really choked that series away to Atlanta 2 years ago. And you look at Atlanta the last couple of years. Yeah, I mean, they're a play-in tournament team, and then they're, you know, an 8 seed in 2022, 7 seed last year. I've seen enough of Trae Young as the best player on their team. So even if you had to trade Trae Young in that trade, if I'm Atlanta and I'm in the middle and I don't want to go backwards, clearly they don't. I mean, it seems like they want to try and keep moving things forward and rise up. Because when you're in the middle of the NBA, you always have to decide, right? You know, Toronto was in the play-in tournament as well in the Eastern Conference this year, and they're going the other way. You know, they might trade Siakam. They should bottom out. Atlanta seems to want to try and compete. So if you're already looking at a Siakam trade, see what else, you know, at least call Portland and see what you can do. And if you can, if there's a deal to be had there. Because again, Atlanta's the kind of team, the New York teams, all right, it's New York. Maybe you can, Brooklyn got Durant. The Knicks always seem to think they can get whoever they want. Atlanta, this is the only way they're ever going to get Damian Lillard. So if they don't want to go backwards and they feel that they've stagnated a bit with what they have and are just a middling team in the play-in tournament, Atlanta is worth making that call to Portland. And then the two teams in the West, first is Oklahoma City. Again, not a destination. This is the only way you're going to be able to get Damian Lillard. And Oklahoma City, much like the Knicks, has done nothing the last 5 years other than hoard draft capital. And we're starting to see some of the fruits of their labor. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looks like one of the better guards in the NBA. The Jalen Williams kid who they drafted out of Santa Clara last year looked pretty good in his rookie year. Josh Giddey. Chet Holmgren hasn't even played. I said keep an eye on him. When earlier in the show, talking about Anthony Edwards getting his max contract and what the All-NBA first team might look like. I'm not ruling out Chet Holmgren. He put on some weight. Supposedly he's gained 30 pounds since he got drafted, up 3 inches in height. So he's still growing into his body. I think Oklahoma City should make this call. Because if there's such a rising team in the NBA, this is part of the reason you collect all those draft picks to at least be able to have Damian Lillard for 3 years. The West is wide open. After Denver, who do you trust? Memphis and the Ja Morant situation going to get resolved? Sacramento and the 3 seed? We're sure that wasn't a one-off. The Lakers just got to the conference finals as a 7 seed. They were in the play-in tournament just like the Thunder last year, who didn't have Chet. I'd make the call if I was the Thunder. And my last team is those Memphis Grizzlies. You're not a destination in free agency. This is the only way you could probably make it work for a guy of Damian Lillard's caliber. Now, I don't know, unlike some of the other teams, I'm not as familiar with what Memphis could trade that would appease Portland. But if you're trying to kind of solve things with Ja Morant and whip him into better shape, who better to do that than Damian Lillard? And you're a contender in a wide-open West. Figure the thing out with Ja. And if you happen to be able to swing a trade to get Lillard there, I think it's a fascinating fit because Lillard does a lot of things like outside shooting and scoring from outside that Morant doesn't do. All right, we'll take a timeout. I saw something on NFL.com. They did a draft of all active players in the NFL. I'll fill you in on that. I saw something that really made me say, are you kidding me? That's on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
With First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, well, I saw this today in show prep, and it felt like a good July topic. And it's obviously the sports calendar dries up, probably for if you're a sports fan. I don't really like the month of February because after the Super Bowl, things dry up. That time in between Super Bowl Sunday and Selection Sunday is pretty slow. But July is probably the worst month in sports as all the NBA stuff. And now, in the case of Lillard, it's a trade, so I guess that could happen any time. But a lot of the free agent, droplings, for lack of a better term, they all get out and get taken care of within the first week or so. And then we have the baseball all-star break and things slow down. So this felt like something good to address on a July show. And NFL.com did a draft of every active player in the NFL. I always like some things like this because it brings up interesting conversations as to what you value in terms of, you know, how old these players are and, you know, what they can do for your team moving forward, things like that. And the way the order was decided was it was just the straight inverse order of last year's standings, meaning the Bears had the number one pick. There was no trade with the Panthers. And there were no debts owed. Like the fifth pick is the Broncos, not the Seahawks. And the sixth pick is the Rams, not the Lions. So with all of that considered, You won't be surprised to hear that the first four picks were, I think, the four quarterbacks who everybody widely regards as the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Pat Mahomes going one to the Bears, which I thought was interesting because the Bears obviously in 2017 had a chance to get Mahomes in the draft and instead opted for Mitch Trubisky. So Mahomes went first. Burrow went second in this mock draft to the Texans, and the Arizona Cardinals got Josh Allen at third. And then Jalen Hurts was the fourth pick to the Colts. Of course, that would be a fun little make-believe fantasy world fit with Hurts and Indy with Shane Steichen, who, of course, was the OC for the Eagles the last couple years under Nick Sirianni, and Jalen Hurts was their quarterback. But here's the one where I was really like, are you kidding me? The fifth pick in a draft in which every single player other than those four quarterbacks was available. The fifth pick was Aaron Rodgers. And I'm sorry, but when you are drafting from scratch, Aaron Rodgers at 39 should not be the fifth overall pick. He went to Denver and, you know, again, fantasy world, make-believe stuff, but I guess you can sell people on the pairing with him and Sean Payton there. But it led me to think that clearly I just think there's a consensus here of people that maybe assume that the change of scenery for Rodgers with the Jets is going to bring about much better play. And I'm just not entirely sold on that, given his decline in 2022 after winning MVPs in 20 and 21. So fifth overall in a draft of every, for some context, sixth, Trevor Lawrence, seventh, Justin Herbert, eighth, Lamar Jackson. So in a draft in which every other quarterback was available other than those four, Mahomes, Allen, Hurts, and Burrow, yeah, there's no way I'm taking Aaron Rodgers over those three. Herbert, Lamar, and Lawrence. I think you could argue all three are better than him right now. And certainly in a draft where you're trying to build your team out moving forward, you want all three of them because they're way younger than Rodgers. So that was crazy. Not as crazy, but still pretty crazy. The ninth pick in this draft is Dak Prescott. And, you know, you read off these. Again, here are the eight quarterbacks that went ahead of Prescott. It's Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Hurts, Rodgers, Lawrence, Herbert, Lamar, and then Prescott. One of those is not like the others, okay? Prescott has only won, I think, two playoff games in his career, two or three, and never been to an NFC Championship game. Had some problems protecting the ball. And, you know, he's a nice quarterback. But, for example, I don't know that I would, you know, Justin Fields goes with the 11th pick in this draft. I'm not entirely sure that I would take Prescott over Fields, given what Fields showed last year. Really seemed to grow and mature. But I think Prescott at 9 is too high. The first non-quarterback in the draft comes off at 10 with Aaron Donald being selected. And I don't know that I agree with that either. I mean, listen, Aaron Donald is certainly the best defensive player that I've ever seen and maybe the best defensive player of all time. But if you were drafting today, Aaron Donald has flirted with retirement. Now, you could argue that was just for a pay raise or a new contract with the Rams. But nonetheless, he's done it. And if I was drafting today, the first non-quarterback that I would take is Nick Bosa. And Bosa is the third non-quarterback in this draft. Tyreek Hill also went ahead of Bosa. Not sure I agree with that either. Again, if you're drafting today with all active players in the NFL and you're drafting a non-quarterback and Aaron Donald is off the board, why would you take Hill, who has already said in 3 years he's just going to retire? And he's got another battery charge against him, so there have been domestic violence problems throughout his career. And I can take any non-quarterback in the league other than Aaron Donald. Yeah, I would take Nick Bosa ahead of Tyreek Hill for sure. I'd take Justin Jefferson ahead of Tyreek Hill. Justin Jefferson was the 18th pick in this draft. Surprised to see Trent Williams go 17 to the team picking 17th in this fantasy draft is the Steelers. But I think Justin Jefferson is the best receiver in football right now. And he's younger than Tyreek Hill. He's way younger than Trent Williams. I'm okay with Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons going ahead of him. Clearly, the edge guys are going to be prioritized. But speaking of premium positions, Sauce Gardner, he's the 20th pick in this draft. I think that's too low. This guy just made the first-team All-Pro as a rookie at arguably the most important position other than quarterback in the sport. If you want to say tackle or edge rusher, fine. But corner, to come in and be that shut down, that right away, obviously the runaway defensive rookie of the year. I think Sauce should have gone higher. Kirk Cousins goes 19. Like, why? It's happening in this fantasy mock draft. I hate it when it happens in real draft. I understand that quarterback's the most important position, but that doesn't mean we need to push up guys that aren't that good. Okay? It's exactly what I mentioned earlier. Chicago did with Mitch Trubisky. They were quarterback greedy. They knew they needed one, and so they took a bad one. And in this draft where we're starting teams from scratch, that doesn't mean I want Kirk Cousins. He's done some nice things in his career, but I think he should be a second-round pick in this draft, to be honest. Because, again, some non-quarterbacks that also went after Cousins, Devontae Adams, Jamar Chase, Travis Kelce, all got into the first round. A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, T.J. Watt, Chris Jones. Gosh, the second-to-last pick of the first round is Kyler Murray. I think even despite all the nonsense, I might rather have Kyler Murray than Kirk Cousins. By the way, it is over. Sophia Kennan advances to the second round at Wimbledon. So Coco out in round one at the All England Lawn Tennis Club. One last interesting one. Again, this is just fun little fantasy fodder because we'll never see this. But the last pick of the first round of this draft, and again, this is a draft from all the active players in the NFL, if they were all available. Geno Smith goes to the Chiefs in this draft at 32. It does make me wonder. Again, we'll never see it, but what Andy Reid could do with the kind of guy like Geno, given the year he just had in Seattle, seems to have rebirthed his career very late after, a decade after getting drafted. And people forget that the Chiefs did a lot of winning before Mahomes got there when Alex Smith was the quarterback. Of course, Mahomes took it to another level and allowed them to win Super Bowls. But be curious if that would ever happen. I mean, we're probably never going to see Reed have another quarterback in his coaching career. Like, I would imagine that Mahomes just takes him to retirement at this point. But a guy like Geno Smith, with an offensive mind like Andy Reid, given what Geno just did, I just thought that was interesting. But Aaron Rodgers, fifth overall, are you kidding me? Every active player in the NFL is available other than Pat Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, and Jalen Hurts. Aaron Rodgers is really your fifth pick? Not for me. No thanks. And yes, if you're wondering, I don't think things are going to go that well for Gangrene. And I'd probably guess in a loaded AFC that they don't make the playoffs. We will take one final timeout. I'm halfway home on my Succession binge as I finished the second season. Actually, this morning, I woke up early and watched the last episode of the second season. So I'll share some halfway thoughts and just some other TV thoughts. If you're looking for something in terms of a release on the horizon, things to watch, we'll get to that to wrap things up. First Name Sports, Sports Member Radio.
Name Sports with Greg Frank continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
I like it, Ron. Was that, do you watch the show?
No.
No. Okay. Gotcha. I've been binging Succession and I am halfway through.
I've heard nothing but good things about it, though.
Yeah, so have you seen I guess the Mount Rushmore. I haven't seen Game of Thrones, but Breaking Bad, The Wire, and The Sopranos are the other.
Like, Sopranos, yes. Breaking Bad, most of the shows. The Wire, I never watched.
Wire, you never watched.
I never
okay.
got into it.
So Breaking Bad, but not all.
I've heard about that and the fact that.
Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones, yes.
Yeah, all of it.
But with The Wire, I guess what stands out the most to me is how much everyone's talked about it, and it was only one season.
It was five.
Or was
the
it
Wire,
five
The Wire is five seasons, yeah.
What show am I thinking of then?
I don't know what show you're thinking of. There was only one. You cast member? Maybe you can throw me some bait that I can maybe nibble on? No? You don't?
No.
Can't even think of a cast member. Okay. All right. Anyway, in other words, the reason I bring up those shows, and again, the Game of Thrones genre, that stuff, I'm not the fantasy type stuff. I like the crime dramas. And, the thrillers. And I feel like Breaking Bad, The Wire, and Sopranos definitely fit that billing a little bit more. And I think there's some of that with Succession, but I don't think it's on that level. Okay, so far at least. I don't think it is Mount Rushmore level television. The second season, now I'm sure, I would hope it gets better because there was a big bombshell at the end of the second season. And, if you followed the show, obviously, through its conclusion earlier this summer, then you know how it ends. I've always said, my rule of thumb is I wait on these things, and then if there's enough hype and I am interested enough in the plot, I wasn't interested enough in the Game of Thrones plot, despite the hype. If there's enough hype, I go back and watch them. So I did The Sopranos all last summer, and these are usually summer ventures for me, because the sports calendar is a little slower. So I thought the second season, the middle of it, got a little slow. But there was definitely some juicy stuff at the end of the season, which definitely has me intrigued as to where we're going in seasons 3 and 4. So as far as characters, I really like Roman, played by Kieran Culkin, Roman Roy. There's like a level of sass and like his personality, like he doesn't, there's no setting in which he won't make a joke in, and he does not care how crass it is sometimes. And I kind of like that. So, I like Roman. I like his personality. I do not like Tom Wamscans, who marries, Shiv, the daughter in the Roy family. Tom is played by Matthew McFadden. I don't know. He's just kind of a dork. Like I don't really feel like his character is all that smart, let's say. And he's not funny either. Like, he just kind of an empty character, I guess. He bullies Greg around a lot in the show. And it's like, well, who are you? Like, you're not really in, like, he's not really in, like, that big of a position of power relative to the other characters. So, Tom, I'm on. I got to say, Logan, played by Brian Cox, who is, obviously an older, Cox is 77 now. So when the show started, he was in his early 70s. Show started in 2018 and it just finished. Obviously, I'm sure COVID delayed things quite a bit. But not that I think they're bad actors, but I felt this way about Cranston with Breaking Bad. The older the protagonist is, like, the harder it is for me to, like, connect with them on a personal level or think that what they're doing is all that realistic and that they wouldn't have just retired in the case of Logan Roy running this media empire, that he wouldn't have just bowed out sooner, and that it's really going to be this dramatic, as the show says, succession plan. So I don't dislike Logan, the character, or Brian Cox, the actor, for that matter. But I guess what I'm saying is he's not really moving the needle for me the way I feel like main actors or main characters should in these shows. And that's how I felt about Walter White. Like, Cranston did a good job, but I didn't think that Walter White was not my favorite character or my least favorite character in Breaking Bad. Like, I like Jesse a lot. In Breaking Bad, Gus was a great bad guy. Mike was cool in Breaking Bad, but Walter just wasn't at the top of my list. Didn't hate him, didn't love him. So far, two seasons in of the 4-season binge, Succession's pretty good. Now, if you're looking for some other television viewing to either get caught up on, or maybe you're right there with me and eagerly awaiting this week, the first part of the 2-part dropping of Lincoln Lawyer Season 2 drops, as that's a Netflix original series which came out last year, and it was inspired by the the movie, with which is one of my favorite movies, the McConaughey Lincoln lawyer. And the movie is based on a novel by Michael Connelly, in which this guy just is a defense attorney, criminal defense attorney, working out of a Lincoln car. And so then they turned it into a TV show on Netflix. The is a Spanish guy, I can't remember his name, who was the lead protagonist. They played the Michael Holler is the name of the attorney. And he was good. I enjoyed it immensely last summer, the first season. And the second season drops this week on Netflix, Thursday, I believe. Yeah, July 6th. The first part of the second season comes out. And then in the first week of August, the rest of season two will be dropped on Netflix. So I've talked about this a lot before. I like the way Netflix does it, where they at least give you half of the season, if not all of it, to consume on your own time. Because I was thinking about that as it was HBO does the traditional like weekly releases. And, you know, I'm about to fast forward 2 years from 2019 to 2021 on Succession, because that's when the third season came out, was 2021. So I like being able to just get it all and not have to wait a week in between. So anyway, The Lincoln Lawyer season two dropping this week. If you haven't yet seen the first season, I think it's 10 episodes. You can do two or three of them in a day. And you can go through it pretty quickly and, you know, get up to speed by the time season two is out. And so Lincoln Lawyer is great. And then in the fall, I think this is it for Yellowstone as the I don't think there's going to be a sixth season. So Yellowstone, yes, Paramount confirmed this a couple months ago in May. Yellowstone will end in the fall. In November. So if you haven't seen the Kevin Costner Paramount drama, still got about 4 months. I think it's the first week of November. The second part of season five drops. The third season, I think, so far was the best season of Yellowstone. They've definitely towed the line a little bit between what's been a little over the top and what's been plausible for a show. So definitely looking forward to Lincoln Lawyer and Yellowstone, but still got to finish, and because I'm up to speed with both of them, but I still have to finish up Succession. Two more seasons to go. Probably have that done by the middle of the month, and then jump into the first part of the Lincoln Lawyer season two. So a little bit of my tea. And again, I've always said this: July is the best month to do this, especially if your baseball team plays in the Eastern Time Zone or the Central Time Zone, and your games get done early. Watch a movie or a TV show at night, and that's usually how I kill my weekend night or weekday nights, excuse me, before hitting the hay. So I will probably do at least one, maybe two episodes of the start of the third season tonight for Succession. And again, I'm moving along, but so far Roman has been my favorite character, like Kieran Culkin. Remember, child actor that worked out. Some of them go away. He was Fuller in Home Alone. I love the mom. Go easy on the Pepsi when they're having the scene in the very beginning of the movie and they all have pizza and he's just draining the Pepsi down. And Macaulay Culkin's all afraid. Oh, I don't want to sleep with Fuller. He's going to wet the bed. Home Alone. You can watch that. I think you can watch it any time of year, but I have to watch it every – it's a part of the Christmas viewing for sure every year. So definitely one of my favorite Christmas things. That's just going to about wrap things up for us on a Monday afternoon. Thanks for Ron Culver for filling in for John Bellmer. And everybody enjoy what's left of the holiday weekend. Like I said at the beginning of the show, it kind of feels like for me it's already over. Did a lot of my 4th of July fun on Saturday. And, you know, it'll be a nice, easy day tomorrow. And then Wednesday through Friday, we'll be back in the saddle with shows from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. First Name Sports here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Again, that does it for me. Thanks again to Ron Culver for producing the show. Thanks to Joey Chestnut. We're going to get that interview podcasted up on our Sports Map Radio website if you missed it. Joey Jaws, good luck tomorrow at Coney Island for another Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Back on Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Greg Frank signing off. First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.